At Australian Family Lawyers, we do family law a little differently. We have a team of experienced family lawyers who speak your language. If you're in Melbourne, call us today on 03 9088 3144. Or if you're in Sydney, 02 9188 2031. Now, here is your podcast.
Separation can be a difficult time for everyone concerned, but having some knowledge of the road ahead can make this process certainly a lot easier. Today, I'm joined by Melissa Muir, a family lawyer at Australian Family Lawyers. Melissa, this can be an incredibly difficult time, can't it?
Certainly, Dan. Separation's often a very emotional and stressful time for people. They're trying to cope with their own emotions, their children's emotions, and oftentimes that affects family and friends who are all indirectly affected by the separation. It's also a very confusing time for people. What should they do? What shouldn't they do now? And it's mixed with the advice, which I put in inverted commas, of well-meaning but often misguided friends and family. These bush lawyers, as I like to call them, always come out of the woodwork when someone separates. They pass on their war stories of their next door neighbours, uncle, brothers, in-laws, second cousins' story of separation. It's therefore extremely important to get the right advice from a lawyer that specialises in the area of family law when you're thinking of separating or when you have separated.
Yeah, so hence the importance of really doing this early so you don't get sort of caught up in those myths, I suppose, of family law.
Correct, Dan, yes.
So, Melissa, what would you consider to be some of the most frequently asked questions from clients that see you regarding family law?
Well, one of the first things that many clients will say is, I want to get a divorce. And this is from seeing a lot of American TV where they see that phrase all the time. But to actually apply for a divorce in Australia, you must be separated for a period of at least 12 months. Now, this doesn't stop you from resolving property and children's matters before that time. And in fact, I strongly recommend that you do start to resolve property and children's matters prior to the divorce. But you at least need the 12-month separation before you can actually apply for the divorce.
So property and children's matters are separate to a divorce, are they?
Yes. So the divorce is really just an administrative process that officially terminates the marriage. The divorce, whilst having other legal repercussions, such as with wills and inheritance and the ability to remarry, does not determine where the children are to live or how the assets and the liabilities of the marriage are to be distributed.
You recommended that property in children's matters are resolved prior to divorce. Why is this?
Well, in relation to the children, it's a really good idea that you and your spouse have at least discussed the future care arrangements for the children around the time that you separate. If possible, it's preferable that at least there can be some interim arrangements regarding who the children live with and how much time they can spend with the other parent. The finer and the long-term arrangements can then be resolved later, perhaps with the assistance of a mediator or even lawyers. So in a nutshell, there are no legal requirements to resolve children's matters prior to divorce, but from a practical perspective, it helps the parents and the children to know what is happening. But even getting back to that divorce question, when the court is determining whether the divorce should be made final, they do need to take into consideration whether there are adequate arrangements for the children. So whilst it doesn't have to be a final arrangement, at least there's some suitable arrangement for the children.
And what about the property?
So there are certain time limits that apply in relation to property. Once the divorce has been granted, the parties have a time limit of 12 months in which to make an application to the court for property orders. The time limit can be extended in certain limited circumstances. However, there's no guarantee that such an extension will be granted. So it's best to either hold off applying for the divorce if you can, or make sure that an application is made to the court before the 12-month time limit. Now, in the case of de facto relationships, there's a time limit of 2 years from the date of separation. From a practical perspective, though, it's much easier for the lawyers and the court, if necessary, to resolve property matters closer to the date of separation, before the influx of time leads to complexities such as depletion of assets or how to attribute credit to parties increasing assets. Resolving property matters also assists the parties to obtain financial certainty and to move on with their lives.
You talked about separation. How do you decide who actually moves out of the family home?
This is a very common question I'm asked. No one necessarily has to move out of the family home, at least not initially. Separation can still occur even though you are living under the one roof. And for financial reasons, many people do this until their property matters have been resolved or they've found an alternate accommodation. So your spouse can't force you to move out of the family home, and similarly, you can't force your spouse to move out of the family home, even if the property is solely in your name or their name, which a lot of people find surprising. The only way that one of the parties can be forced out of the home, if they don't leave voluntarily, it would be to obtain an intervention order in the magistrate's court or an order for exclusive occupation in the family court or the Federal Circuit Court.
So on a practical level, if one of the parties moves out of the family home, who ends up paying for the mortgage?
So legally, those people that are listed on the mortgage have an obligation to pay the mortgage. So therefore, if it's a jointly owned a property by the couple and or both parties are named on the mortgage, then the spouse who has moved out of the home still has a legal obligation to continue paying the mortgage if they're named on the mortgage. Mm. However, for family law purposes, it's usual that the spouse who stays in the home is responsible for the mortgage repayments and all of the outgoings of the property whilst they're in the home. Given that the spouse who's moved out of the home often has the added burden of relocation costs and the payment of rent themselves.
So what happens though if, for instance, the stay-at-home mother who has the care of the young children of the marriage stays in the home but can't afford to pay the mortgage because she doesn't work? What happens in that circumstance?
Well, if her husband refuses to pay the mortgage, then I may advise her to make an application to the court seeking orders, at least on an interim basis, that he's to pay her a certain amount of spouse or maintenance, for instance, or even to pay the mortgage. On the other hand, for the husband, he may be able to credit part of the mortgage repayments towards reducing his child support obligation. So that's definitely something that I'd be advising the husband to look into if that was the case. It's really just an interim solution, though, until final orders are made. It doesn't mean that the spouse who's moved out has to continue paying that mortgage forever, but really just until final orders are made resolving the property matters on a final basis.
Now, what happens if things go a little bit pear-shaped in that scenario? I mean, what if the spouse who has moved out and the ex stays in the home but refuses to pay the mortgage? What happens there?
Well, I mean, as above, you'd need to apply to the court to get an interim order that your ex makes the mortgage repayments. That can often be difficult if they're the one that can't afford to pay the mortgage, and the court would look into whether you're the one that needs to be paying the mortgage or paying them a certain amount of spouse or maintenance. However, alternate orders that could be made are for your ex to move out of the home and for you to move into the home. If there are children involved and it's your ex that's caring for the children, it's probably unlikely that the court would make that order, particularly if there's no alternate accommodation for them to go into. But alternatively, you may even seek orders that the home be sold and the proceeds of sale remain in a trust account pending finalisation of your property settlement. That's really only if neither you or your spouse are intending on keeping the property on a final basis.
And if you move out of the home, does that ultimately affect your entitlement to the property?
I often have clients coming in saying that their spouse has told them if they move out of the home, they'll get nothing. Hmm. But it's simply not true. If you move out of the home, whether voluntarily or by an IVO or a court order, this does not affect your entitlement to the assets of the relationship. Now, even if you were the one to call off the relationship or were having an affair, for instance, this of itself does not affect your entitlement. It's what's commonly known as a no-fault divorce under the Family Law Act. Now, practically, though, it may make it harder to negotiate because it may reduce the other party's motivation to settle, particularly if they're the one living in the home virtually rent or mortgage free. Now, why would they want to settle? It might mean that they've got to pay you money. So from a practical point of negotiating, it can be harder. So for those reasons, then, you may wish to consider staying in the home until final settlement. However, there is an emotional toll, and it can be very high because it can be very difficult to live with your ex-partner following separation. Mm. I mean, that a lot of the time, that's why you've separated in the first place. but there are also safety concerns to consider for both yourself and any children. So for safety reasons, it may not be best to be staying in the same property. But going back to maybe you want to consider getting an intervention order, if that's the case, if you're concerned for, concerned for your safety, to get your spouse out of the home.
Melissa, is it true that once you start living together or get married that you are automatically entitled to half?
Short answer, no. It's a common misconception and I hear it a lot. For a start, simply living together in a de facto relationship does not automatically give you any entitlement to property. The de facto relationship must have been for at least 2 years, or there is a child of the de facto relationship, or the applicant must have made substantial contributions, such as, for instance, making a deposit on the property or mortgage repayments, and failing to make an order would result in a serious injustice to the applicant. But even if that's satisfied, living in the de facto relationship or getting married does not automatically entitle you or your spouse to half of the assets or even any of the assets. The first consideration is whether it would be just and equitable to make any order adjusting property interests in the first place. But there are also a number of other considerations that the Family Law Act sets out, such as who contributed both financially and non-financially to the assets, whether there are any children and who cared for children and who's going to have the ongoing care of the children, and each party's income earning capacity. It's therefore very important to obtain independent legal advice from a family law specialist as to what your entitlements are under the Family Law Act, as every case is decided differently. Just because your friend may have obtained a certain outcome doesn't mean that you'll get the same.
So if you are able to reach an agreement with your spouse about property, do you really need to actually go and see a lawyer? Won't this just increase costs?
Well, it's very important that even if you are able to come to an agreement with your spouse about the division of the property, that this is formalised into a legally enforceable document. Now, simply signing a piece of paper that you and your spouse prepare is not a binding document. If you don't formalise the agreement, your spouse may be able to make a claim against your assets in the future. So even if you don't own much now, your financial position could change. For instance, you could get a better job, win lotto, or you could receive a substantial inheritance. And these aren't necessarily safe just because they occurred after the separation. Now, if the agreement is formalised by way of a financial agreement, then yes, you do legally need to see a lawyer to obtain independent legal advice about the effect of the agreement on your rights and the advantages and disadvantages of entering into the agreement. And the lawyer will have to actually sign that financial agreement to say that they've given you that certain advice. The other alternative to formalise an agreement is to enter into consent orders that are made in the family court. And whilst you don't need to legally have a lawyer to do this, it's a very good idea if you do. Now, a lawyer who specialises in family law will know how to prepare the consent orders and what information to include and how to structure the orders to ensure that your rights are protected. I've had clients who have come to me who tried to save money by preparing the consent orders themselves. Years later, the other party has made an application to the court to set the consent orders aside on the basis that not all information was included in the consent orders. This has then cost my clients literally thousands of dollars in legal fees to try and defend the matter at court. Whereas if the clients had seen a lawyer to prepare the consent orders in the first place, yes, there would have been some legal fees to prepare the documents. However, the cost savings would have been enormous because it would have saved them thousands of dollars in the long run. So therefore, seeing a family lawyer early can be a very wise investment.
Melissa, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure, Dan. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you have any questions, please don't hesitate contacting us. If you're in Melbourne, call us today on 03 9188 3184. Or if you're in Sydney, 02 9188 2031. Thank you.